Hello, everyone, and welcome to the third, first and last ever DL Game Club for the game Gone Home. So with me tonight, I have Bobby.
Hey, hey.
Chad.
Not
with a much much higher voice. No, we got Chi subbing in for Chad because he apparently can't finish an hour long game in 2 months.
Yeah, he was really scared to play this game, to be honest. I saw him. He had goosebumps before like he even got 10 minutes in, and he was like, "Shut it off! I can't handle it."
Yeah, little does he know it's not really anything scary going on. And Emilio, finally.
It's going to be a spooky episode.
Oh, and it's great considering, you know, Pride is right around the corner. So this is great.
Well, that's fitting.
Yeah, and I hope that Bobby has the spooky soundboard set up for this episode. The lightning and the creaky doors, yeah?
Yeah, I'm just over here with the little things to do the Foley.
That wasn't lightning. That was fake lightning on one of those, like, boards that they, or was it like a big piece of metal?
Yeah. The thunder. Lightning doesn't make noise.
Got
thunder
two coconuts does. To make the footstep sound.
Shut up, Chief.
Okay, guys, so how are we going to do this episode? So we're just going to do a quick run-through of the story. And I really want to get, you know, like if I miss anything, I want the my fellow co-hosts here to throw in extra information because, as you guys know, or maybe you don't know, that's why we're explaining it, this game, there's a lot of text that you read among things that you find in the environment, which is the house. And so, you know, I beat the game extremely quickly, I guess, relative to everyone else. So there are definitely things that I could have missed story-wise. So outside of the main story, there's a lot of stuff like background information you can learn. So if I miss any of that, feel free to jump in. So the base story of Gone Home is a love story. I guess that's the easiest way to put it, is this is a love story. And what it is you come back from being abroad in Europe to your really big, spooky mansion house in northwestern U.S., I believe. It's like Montana or something.
Way too big for horror people.
and so you find no one home. It's just gone. You got in really late. It's all spooky lightning and stuff outside. That's the real reason why Chad isn't here. He's got too spooked. Mm-hmm. And so you slowly go around the house finding slips of paper that will then kind of activate audio cutscenes, if you will, or, you know, audio diaries as we had in BioShock. And that'll kind of give you pieces of the story. And as you go along, you basically find out that your sister discovers that she's a lesbian. She falls in love with this other girl that she hangs out a lot and that she really idolizes.
And this is early 80s, right?
Mid-90s, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Somebody mentioned, I play this on stream, when you were looking at a magazine, it said, you know, read zine, and people haven't called magazines just zines in a while. So
I didn't even know that was a thing, ever.
Some little throwback things.
Yeah. Well, we should also mention that the character you play is a 21-year-old woman, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things you have to figure out just from reading. And her younger sister, in a note that was left, mentioned that her sister was 3 years older than her. And I think she said she was 17, so that would make her about 20 or 21.
So my ex-girlfriend's name is Katie, and my current girlfriend's name is Sam, and Sam hates Katie. And we're watching this game together, and she's watching me play, and it first thing is Sam and Katie. And she's like, "Oh, look at that." I was like, "Oh, my God, shut
she's
up."
She's like, "Oh, I wonder why you decided to play this game.
Now,
with Gone Home, having played a lot of spooky games like Outlast and whatnot, the premise of this, when you first approach this mansion, first and foremost, this house, it's not a mansion, it's a manor. This house you've never actually been home to. You as Caitlin come home to a home that you've never been to because they inherited it from a dead psycho uncle.
Oh, I didn't know she had never been there.
Yeah.
And
when you come back home to this place, all you see is this note on the door from your little sister basically saying, "Hey, I'm missing. Don't worry about me, but welcome home." just don't go looking for me. And so, you know, you're walking around, everything's dark.
Oh, and please forgive me for what I did.
What's that?
That's what she says.
Oh, and
which, which throws you off.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's eerie. You hear the floor creak, and you'll hear things, but you don't see anything. And, you're kind of piecing together the clues of the mystery behind the missing family. Like, what exactly is happening? And,
but then, it's going down several paths and you don't know what is the main storyline.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're getting the audio cues from your sister, but the dad was a failed, he's starting to fail and losing his grip with his work, which he's an author. And he seems a little bit of like Johnny working all day. What is that?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. It's
what is that?
All work and no play makes Johnny a dull boy.
Yeah. So because he's made like five books and they all have the same first ones, and then the last one seems really weird, but I think it was just kind of a relief stress or whatever. The mom really, I think, was the most sane. She had something an affair going on, or
that's exactly what I took out of that as well, because it never comes out and says it, but
or maybe she was thinking about it.
You can definitely kind of figure out that she was probably having an affair.
And then the uncle, there's a few things that are like maybe pointing at the occult about him.
Yeah.
So you and then so there's that, and then there's the sister that's exploring the house with her lesbian friend, but then she also has a male friend that, you know, she's confused because she's a teenager, you know, going through sexuality. And so there's all these storylines going on. And you're like, and meanwhile, there's the noises and there's weird noises. There's that like this, there's something that really you can't explain even towards the end of the game. Maybe you guys can. There's
I don't know. It's probably that ticking, the sound of lightning.
Or clapping. There's like a... Did you guys hear that?
That sounds like fapping. I think it was...
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they set up the game. They kind of set it up to where you think you're walking into a scary game. You're a girl that shows up at an abandoned house at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's raining outside. It's dark. There's nobody there. There's these mysterious notes left around. And what I really took away from the game that I was so impressed by, this is my second time playing it, by the way, but it ends up at the end, you find out that it ends up being a love story between the younger sister and this girl that she met at school. But it also develops these minor characters with the story, the mom, the dad, the uncle, and the grandfather, and you learn a lot about them as well. But there's really nothing.
And yourself too.
Yeah, and her too, because you find postcards that you had sent while you were away. But you never really. God, what was I going to say then? I totally stumbled over what my train of thought.
The first postcard that you pick up, she looks at the address. She points at the address and it says weird. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
I think the address that she wrote the postcard from was number 1 Arbor as well, or something. I forgot what it was. But anyway, I was looking all over for it. I was like, what? Which way is this going? Who knew?
So I just want to, real quick, I think now that we've kind of gotten the story nailed down, how long did it take everyone to beat the game? Because I finished it in like 52 minutes of actual playtime, which I feel like was really fast. But I also felt like I pretty much got everything. Like I knew about the occult stuff. I figured out the affair. I figured out he was a failing writer. And I feel like I got the whole story. How long did it take you guys to get through that stuff? And I'm wondering if I really missed anything.
Well, on my second playthrough, I thought it would go a little bit quicker, but it really didn't. The first time I played through it, I didn't want to miss anything, so I picked up every object. And there's a lot of objects you can pick up. You can open the fridge, the microwave, like every drawer. You can shuffle through all the papers and the trash bins, and a lot of that just isn't necessary. So the second time, I went a little bit quicker, but it still took me about an hour and a half, although I did find more on my second playthrough and kind of pieced together a little bit more of this story than I did the first time. The one thing that I had missed, there are locked safes, and one or two of them I think is optional. You don't need to find the code and open it. But one locked safe in the secret hallways within the house, there's lots of trap doors, which kind of add to that scary factor. There was a safe that had some medicine bottles in it and a letter from the uncle.
See, that added so much time to me because I never found that combination.
I actually opened the lock safe in the basement or one of the hidden lower dungeon-like areas.
Yeah.
But as for the father's cabinet, I was unable to unlock that.
Wow.
Were you able to do that?
I opened that one, but not the other one.
How did you find the code? Do you remember?
It was on a folder in the library or in the study. There was a folder, like a manila folder that you open, and then written in big numbers was the code there. And I think that revealed, and all the stuff that's revealed through these locked compartments are not necessary to finishing the game, but it kind of gives you just a deeper understanding of what's going on. And I think that one revealed how they acquired the house.
Oh.
So okay. What was the one in the basement?
The one in the basement, I had to do a little reading up on this. It was basically a letter from the uncle apologizing to the family for some past transgression, and they would not forgive him for it. So it kind of gives some understanding to the uncle, because the whole time you think he's this really creepy character who, what, would he kill himself or something in that house, or and everyone considered him crazy. But then you kind of find out, well, there was something that happened or something he did that caused all this and was the reason he was acting so strange. And a lot of people, when I read up on it, a lot of people were saying that he molested the father, your father, the writer, and that, like, he just couldn't live with himself after that. And that's why he kind of acted strange, went crazy, and eventually killed himself.
Wait,
what was the title of his books?
Brother molested another brother?
No, it would be his.
No, his dad's uncle.
His dad's brother.
Or your dad's uncle. Your dad's uncle.
Oh.
Yeah.
Molested him.
Oh,
Oscar.
Boy,
he's your great-grandfather.
Oh, yeah. The letter was almost like, I will lock myself away from everybody else to kind of control and tame, like, these unnatural desires of my own.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I read that as a cult or being a cult.
Hmm. Right. Well, that's what, when you find the pieces that were left by Sam and her friend. What was her friend's name? Do we remember what that was?
Lynn, something like that?
Liz? No.
No.
I feel like it was Lenny. Maybe Lenny?
No. I remember the last name, DeSoto.
Close, man.
Yeah. But you find they were kind of like on this
Let's
whole ghost hunt.
Let's just call her
hunt.
Les.
Yeah. The two were on this ghost hunt trying to find, or trying to, like, resurrect the ghost. So, and the whole time, I remember what I wanted to say earlier, the whole time they're kind of leading you towards this, like, ooh, this is spooky and scary. And the only thing that actually is scary that happens is when you're in the basement, the light goes out. It just randomly goes out at some point. And it was right where there's a cross sitting on the on a ledge.
That crucifix.
There. So, yeah, it was kind of spooky. But by the end of the game, you realize there was nothing to be afraid of. And that's kind of what it actually is like to be afraid in real life. You know,
yeah.
To be scared of the dark or noises in the dark is completely unjustified. It's just you in your head. So I thought it was really cool. By the time you reach the end of this game, you realize this isn't a scary game. This was just like I made it scary because I was projecting all this stuff onto it. So
right.
I found it very realistic in that sense.
Her name was Lonnie, by the way.
Lonnie DeSoto, that's it.
There was to this day, there's this sound that I can't pinpoint what it was. I think obviously they put it in the game too. There's several times where I look behind
Well,
me.
Well, they live in a big forest. There's probably like trees knocking against something because it was windy and raining.
Fuck you, man. It's a scary game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought even when I got into the attic, still there was something going to happen.
Yeah. Well, because this takes place in the 90s, it is a period piece. And the people that made this game put a lot of effort to make this seem very nostalgic, especially for people around my age who remember all that. They had SNES cartridges. They had Magic Eye posters. They had...
which work.
Yeah, which actually worked.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice touch.
And you know, it's funny, too.
I didn't try that hard to make those work. But that's cool.
I don't remember being able to do those in real life, and I was able to do both of them.
In a video game.
I thought for sure a code was going to be in them, but one was a
shark
heart
and one was a heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had, like in the girls' room, they had all these posters and stickers, and they had like characters from popular 90s shows. They even had a TV guide with all the 90s shows listed in there. Like they went to great lengths to make this realistic of the time period.
I have to say that I was really hoping that there wasn't going to be a ghost or wasn't going to be, because I was so wrapped up in the love story, I didn't want it to be interrupted with some stupid shit scaring me. I really genuinely was very interested in the love story. I thought it was really well written, and I was hook, line, and sinker. I was really interested in that. So
yeah, same.
It had a monster or a gremlin jumped out. I was just like, this is stupid. I want to know what happened, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm glad it ended the way it did.
Yeah, and they did kind of tie up some of the subplots, too. Like, if you followed through and read a lot of this stuff near the end, you found that even though the dad was struggling with his writing career and with, you know, no one was buying his book, a publisher eventually found him and took interest in it and wanted to revive it and bring his career back. And then also with the dad and the wife, you know, they're having marital problems. You see she's interested in this new person at work. She works at the forestry department, and you find receipts for her getting her hair done, and you find a ticket stub for Earth, Wind, and Fire. But then you see a document for like marriage counseling or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you can see they're trying to make it work. So it's just kind of like building the story through the pieces that you find. It was quite a bit of reading, though.
I have a crazy theory. Get ready for it. Sure. Okay. The mom in this game is the girl that you talk to in Firewatch.
And maybe.
Let it sink in. Let it blow your mind.
Well, I have not played Firewatch, but that is entirely possible because I recognize two names that worked on this game. The designer, Steve Gaynor, and the composer, Chris Primo, are both people that are on another podcast I listen to called Idle Thumbs.
Mind blown.
What is Firewatch? And they worked on, is it related to Gone Home?
Well, he just had a couple of developers.
Yes. And the games are also very similar. This game, I think, definitely, you know, obviously came out before Firewatch, but I played Firewatch first. You know, Firewatch still had that thing where it strings you along and it makes you think, spoilers for Firewatch. It makes you think there's something else going on. There's something big and grand and super supernatural. And then at the end you find out, you know, it's just the human imagination running wild.
Yeah, so
kind of the same way it does here. You know, very giant kind of anticlimactic ending. So that's why they both really reminded me just of that style. So that's why I was just kind of throwing out that crazy fan theory.
Did you come up with that on your own, dude? Because I think, well, if she is interested in somebody at work in the fire agency or whatever, I mean, this forestry agency, that totally could work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's possible. Bruce, I mean, no, I just totally threw that. I just had that realization, like sitting here talking to you guys about it, but
that's
who knows.
Crazy.
Dang. So, I mean, we can come back to the story and talk more about that and the characters, but what did you guys think of the graphics? This ran on the Unity engine, and you never see the character that you play. You see pictures of people on dressers.
There's
and stuff.
A picture of Katie and Sam. There's a couple, actually.
Yeah, but you never actually see yourself, like, in a mirror.
Yeah, oh,
like,
gotcha.
You don't see the 3D model. Like, she's not modeled.
Yeah, so they don't have to actually render a person. So they totally get away from having to make yourself look either realistic or cartoony. And they're able to make the rest of the world look entirely realistic. And I bought into it a lot more just because I didn't see my character and have it break that for me.
For sure, that's a nice touch. And it's funny that I didn't notice the lack of mirrors, but obviously that would be a thing, right?
I'd never noticed that.
But then the other thing was, I lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that like it definitely looked like a Unity game, like for sure.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also thought it was done really well. So even though I thought some of the geometry was kind of weird, and the layout of the house itself seemed kind of weird, just the proportion of things
like
that.
Big,
I still thought it was done really well, and I think it's one of those games that when you remember it, you remember it as looking really good, but when you actually look at it, it doesn't look that good. Yeah. I think they did a really good job of kind of tricking your mind into thinking it was looking really good, even though it doesn't actually look that good.
Actually, probably 60 or 70% through the game, I realized, oh, there's no character models in this game. Mm-hmm. There's no way there's going to be a monster because they didn't just animate one thing. Like that's how
you don't run into any other people.
I figured it out. I was like, if I do see something, it's going to be like an apparition or something. There's not going to be like another person in this game.
Yeah.
G, what'd you think?
For the graphics, yes. I mean, they were done well enough. I think they put a lot of detail in the things that you were able to pick up, and that was virtually anything, really. And I wonder, since playing through this game, I did a lot of picking up of everything, but not really paying as much attention to some of the finer details. I'd listen to all of the audio files, but as soon as it, and some of the reading and whatnot, I didn't go to much in depth. I felt this game, other than the visuals, and the pace was fair, but near the end, I was starting to roll my eyes a little bit. I'm like, okay, get on. I already know she's a lesbian, you know, yeah. but just let me know where the hell she is, you know. So yeah, it's just one of those things where...
I was missing one audio log, and I had to go back. This took me over 2 hours because I was like, I can't find this last audio log. Mm-hmm. And then I had to retrace everything. And what it was in the kitchen, I couldn't see. I forgot to check the garden. I saw the garden through the window, but I forgot to just go around and go into the garden like a dumbass. So. Yeah.
And I think the audio logs are really the only necessary part of the story. Everything else that you read is just kind of ancillary, and they're just for more world building if you want. Yeah. But you can just go through and read all the audio logs.
Bobby, Chad was considering coming on the podcast. I was like, dude, turn it on. We can beat this game in 1 minute. But it doesn't really matter because it's more about the path than the
exactly.
They call it an exploration simulator game because a lot of criticism about this game when it came out was, is this really a game? And it kind of sparked up that whole conversation. There's been a lot of these quote-unquote walking simulators that have come, I think, after this game. But I felt like this was really the big one that came out that kind of made it a genre almost.
So there was a game that came out before this called Dear Esther, and as far as I know, that was the actual first quote-unquote walking simulator, and I really, really enjoy that game. I would highly recommend it for anyone that enjoyed Gone Home. It's a little bit harder to grasp the story because you walk through an island, you're not really reading anything, you're just kind of walking through this space. And all the narrative is given to you in like English poems. It's done really well, but it's a little bit harder to grasp. It's not as kind of straightforward, hit you in the face with like diary entries and stuff. But that is also a really, really good game. If anyone enjoys walking simulators,
I have to say that I enjoyed Firewatch a bit more because, I'm not the best reader and the voice acting was so good in that it was much easier for me to...
Voice acting is much more expensive, but I think it pays off a lot, especially in a game like this, because one of the things I hate the most about video games is reading. That sounds terrible, but I just hate when I have to read, whether it be dialogue lines or text that's been left or something, then it wears on me. But I don't know. It wasn't too bad in this game, and I kind of appreciated that they kept the game this length because had it gone on for even 4 hours, would have been too much.
Yeah. So, and I agree with you with the whole reading thing. I feel like it interrupts some elements. It's great, but when you just throw it in there for extra fluff, I felt like that. And a lot of walking simulators, or even games like Outlast and Soma, where some of the things just aren't relative, and they just make you stop and read, and you think you're looking for something important, but you can't even piece together the material with everything else that you're doing in the game. And with that, but with this one, I felt like a lot of the things were short reads, but some of the stories, like for instance, there was one story in the kitchen where it was literally one of her first books she ever wrote. And I was like, why do I need to finish reading
a four-year-old.
I'm like, lotta. They play it in the woods. Okay, done. You know, where the fuck is something interesting or challenging?
Three of those.
I got pretty bored from this walking simulator. Yes, the story is enthralling, but not to the point where if you don't give me like a Rubik's cube to solve, like, what am I doing?
And reading suspends the suspense. Like, I'm all into this house. I'm spooked out. And then now I'm reading. And now I don't care about monsters because I know time's frozen while I'm reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
but that's a good example of what I was saying earlier about if there's more story there if you want to get into it, but you can pass it up. The story you were talking about that she had started writing was about a pirate and her first mate and the adventures that they go on. And as you progress through the game, you find more and more of these stories until you get to the very end. And the first mate or the captain, I can't remember which one, gets transformed into a girl and then they fall in love. So it's kind of like It's kind of like a metaphor for her, or it's actually her coming out, like in her story. She has a story that she's been writing for a long time, and then she kind of realizes this about herself, and then she expresses it in this story. So I thought that was pretty significant. But yeah, going up into that point, it kind of just seemed a little needless.
Is that the comic book? Did it culminate into the comic book, Bobby? I totally glossed over what the comic book was about.
Comic book was kind of the same thing, too. Like, they kind of started their own club and started writing their own comic book, and they made their own band. All stuff that I could totally see, like, a teenager in the 90s doing, too.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like they really captured that age.
For not having any people, this was very human. A very lived-in house, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so now that we've kind of discussed that, and I think Chi kind of already gave her thoughts, but I just want to go around and see what everyone thought about the game as a whole. Like, how would you rate it? Would you recommend it or not? You're not allowed to give it an 82. Yeah, just go around and kind of give your thoughts on the game as a whole and how much you liked it or disliked it.
Well, I don't think you can enjoy this game now that you listen to this podcast. So if you did it in the opposite order, I wouldn't recommend to anybody who hasn't played it but listen to this. But if somehow, see, it doesn't even matter what I say now because, you know, nobody's going to go out and listen to it or play it. It's not like one of these other games where you can enjoy the gameplay. But anyway, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Like I said, I caught the feels on the love story, and, it wasn't even about it being lesbian or anything. It was just really nicely written, and you could see how she was confused with her sexuality and, you know, dealing with her parents acting like it was a phase or whatever the fuck. So I thought that was just really nice. And I don't think there's only a few games that have really tricked me and gave me a misdirect this big. I mean, at least 50% of the game, I was convinced something was going to happen, but mm-hmm. turned out being nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that'll sum up a lot of what I have to say, too. I know the game is very short, and although I appreciate that, a lot of people have complained about the price point, $19.99 for what is essentially an hour to 2 hours of gameplay. And yeah, that could be a problem, but I feel like a lot of effort went into the details on this game, and they really set out, or they really accomplished what they set out to do. And I mean, I applaud them for that. So yeah, I would recommend this game. You can find it on sale all the time. But mm-hmm.
What's funny about that is if you compare that to Firewatch, which came out to 1999, how much more development time must have gone into the Firewatch than this.
Mm-hmm.
But they came out at the same price point, which is interesting.
I would agree. This is definitely a good game to play, considering it only takes about an hour to an hour and a half to complete. The storyline is intriguing enough. But for me, the distaste in my mouth is the fact that even though I was walking around and discovering things, I felt like not any of my actions actually led to an accomplishment. It was more so like reading a mystery novel and seeing, like, you know, just seeing how things, unfold. But whereas there are other, you know, other simulation games where I don't know, it's like, just give me a puzzle, give me some type of decision making that might, you know, alter the effects of, like, or the results of the game. And I would have liked it a little bit more in that sense. But for an hour and a half, it was good. But I wouldn't want to play this twice over. Of course, knowing the story. But if this game had a second one, I wouldn't be more than intrigued to want to be like, oh, I gotta find out what happens, you know, with my lesbian sister. Like, I'm not eager to play a reproduction of this game, I suppose.
But it was good for what it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would actually agree with pretty much everything you guys said too. Is that you know, I got it on sale during the Steam sale for $4, I think. And this is actually the only game I bought on the Steam sale, so be proud of me. Mm-hmm. And I bought 3D Mark, but I'm not counting that. And so I think for $4, that was a sweet spot. But if I had paid $20, I would probably be using that Steam refund less than 2 hours of game time, because for 20, I feel like this is not at all, you know, worth it. Especially considering I beat it in 52 minutes. But I did really enjoy it. Like Emilio said, I definitely got the feels throughout the story. I think partially because I was so not expecting it, and then just also because it's just kind of such an intimate scenario. You might think of, you know, what seems like a really simple love story in a little more personal way. And then kind of to top it off, I'm going to start using CSGO references just for chi. So the company that made this game is called The Folsom Company. And in my opinion, this was kind of like their eco round. So they didn't have a lot of money. They only had a few developers. And they put this out, and this won a bunch of Game of the Year awards. It got really high scores.
I think what was the show, Bobby? The Video Game Awards gave it Game of the Year.
Yeah, I believe so. And I feel like quite a few other outlets did as well. Yeah. And so, you know, they won the eco round. Like, they're going in with full rifles, double op, and all the utility they can buy. Their next game is called Tacoma, which is basically you wake up on a space station and the crew is all gone and you try to piece together what happened. So, like, similar setup from that perspective, but I also doubt it's going to involve space lesbians. So I'm
Wait, is that game out?
I'm personally, it's not out yet. Okay. It is currently in development. It sounded like at this last E3, it sounded like it was pretty much done, and then they just decided to scrap a lot of it because it wasn't where they wanted it to be. So I think it's been delayed quite a bit. But I, for one, after this game, am definitely looking forward to Tacoma, and I'm wondering if you guys are also looking forward to what their next game brings, especially now that they have so much more money, assuming they have, you know, more developers, things like that.
Chad was talking about, what is it called, the sophomore slump or whatever, when, you know, you come out with your first thing and it's fantastic because you worked on it for 10 years, but then you got to follow that shit up the next time, but you only work on that for like 2 years. You might run into a little bit of that with this. But if they're delaying, that's good news. Nobody's dying for this game to come out. Take your time. Make sure it's polished. And we'll see where it goes.
This game came out in August of 2013, so it's almost been 3 years.
Yeah. But if they do their due diligence like they did in this game, you know, it's going to take a while to do all that research. Mm-hmm. Although, yeah, I guess if it's exactly in the future, you could just make it make shit up.
Yeah, that too.
Gone home. Authentic spaceships, I guess.
Right. Well, these are experienced developers. I believe some of them had worked on the BioShock series. So,
I think a lot of them came from Irrational.
Yeah.
Before they got kind of.
That was kind of the big hype around this game when it had come out. You know, it was like from the guys that brought you BioShock. So had that going for it. But I'm sure whatever they do next will be impressive as well.
Well, just, you know, a plot twist in space is humongous. You know, something as personal as like a family life, you know, I see how that story is intriguing, but to be in an open world, like an outer space, then that might be a little bit more appealing than, you know, what you just might discover about a handful of people. There are so many different elements in an outer world that could make a walking simulator more appealing to me in a sense.
So the real question is, how many times did you click on the letter between her and her girlfriend about them describing their sexual encounter or what they want to do with each other? How many times did you guys re-click on that?
It doesn't let you reopen it because I was like already done with the storyline that I didn't even realize that it was like one of a more unique twist or turn in the relationship. I was like, oh shit, you know, I missed it. Can I redo it? And it wouldn't let me.
Yeah.
It's only because I literally missed it.
No, it doesn't let you, but I kept trying.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I was over 2 hours.
Yeah. I had to guess why she wouldn't, like, I had to guess why she closed out. I didn't read all but maybe first line.
Oh, right.
And then
she's all, ew. And then you try to touch it. She goes, no way.
Yeah. She's like, I'm not getting in that. I'm like, oh, I know why. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was another letter somewhere in there where they talked about, like, you know, she was coming home or something. Like, they were going to meet up, and they hadn't seen each other for a while, and, like, she was about to go away as well, so they had to spend a lot of time in the dark room, quote-unquote. Yeah. And I was like, man, this is basically just my high school. Like, my story's interchangeable.
Another nice touch was the tags on the sweaters that were in her locker, because they had shoplifted them. I thought that was a really nice touch. That's the way I interpreted that.
Oh, you know? Rebels.
You know, they're in a punk band.
My token item that I picked up was the banana in the fridge. I think at that point when I picked up the banana, I was hovering it over my head. Like, I found a heart in The Legend of Zelda. And it was just, like, rotating. And, you know, I could hear the Zelda music, like, oh, you know, you.
Why'd you love the banana so much?
I don't know, because it was the first thing.
Something you could play with. No, I meant like something interactive.
Yeah, it was like something. Well, the banana wasn't super interactive, but it was. I just have a thing.
They usually aren't.
Speak for yourself, dude.
But it was just one of the things where it's like I used it as a stopping point. I'm like, okay, I found the banana. I think I accomplished something in this game. Like I said, I was just itching for some sense of accomplishment playing this game. And when I found the banana, I was like, oh, that's my stopping point. I found the secret treasure. And time to, you know.
Here were my stopping points. The first time I saw the attic with the red lights, I'm like, okay, I'm done. And then the second time was when I found the secret thing and it went downstairs into an attic in the parents' closet. I was like, I'm done. Those are the two times that I stopped and I had to come back and play.
Yeah, there were a few times. When I went down to the basement, and I went into, like, a back room, and then I came back out, and there was, like, a door open that I knew I had not opened and a light on. I was pondering noping out, but it was also like 3 p.m. on a Sunday. I was like, all right, dude, if you can't do this on like 3 p.m. on a Sunday, you're never going to do it.
And Bobby, you know, what's funny about that light shattering, which is the point where you're like, okay, come on, monsters. But I went and picked up the crucifix. Did you guys like, cause I was like, okay, maybe this is going to protect me against whatever happens. So I'm carrying the crucifix, fucking chanting shit around the house.
Playing it a second time, I had a whole different outlook on the game. I was not scared by anything.
I was meant to ask you, there's no different thing you can do, right? The game ends the same way. There's no choices.
The game doesn't end any differently, but there's a lot more that you can pick up on. There were a few things that I found, like I had mentioned the safe in the basement corridors, and also I noticed the pillow fort this time. I had completely skipped that on my first playthrough. I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Where's that?
It was in, I think, the den or one of those areas. There was a pillow fort, and then later I found a note somewhere that said, like, the Oscar ghost was doing this or that, so we had to set up a pillow fort to protect us or something like that.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah.
So downstairs where there, I think it's right next to the safe or something. There's something downstairs, and there's these bells, and then two of them are broken. Or one of them is broken.
In the bathroom.
Did anybody figure out what that is?
Yeah, me neither.
I thought for sure that was going to unlock something. I was fucking playing with those bells, fucking trying to unlock that safe. I thought that's how you unlock that safe. So I'm like fucking with those bells because like three of them make the proper tone. One of them makes the wrong tone. One's missing. So nobody.
What did those bells do? Like what?
Apparently nothing. Maybe they're just a red herring.
I mean, do you think somebody rang those bells?
Can we look that up, Bobby? Is there anything to do in there?
The bells in the bathroom?
The bells, yeah. The bells.
All I know with the game that I managed to do every single time I saw it was the cassettes and the music. Tapes. I would pick it up and throw it away immediately, find the closest trash bin and just throw away the cassette or get it as far away from the cassette player because all that music was just shite. I hated all of it.
Wow, I thought it was I didn't think it was great or anything, but I thought it sounded like a high school rock band.
You're talking about the cassette tapes that were left around and you could put those in. There was always a cassette player. You could put them in to kind of play and then it was like a soundtrack while you're walking around checking out the room. But yeah, what's funny about that, it was like a lot of punk bands, you know, typical mid-90s stuff, and some of like their own music, the two girls when they started their own punk bands. But when I listened to it, I'm like, this is terrible and obnoxious. But that was the type of music I listened to back in the 90s. And when I go back and listen to that type of music now, I'm like, how the fuck did I listen to this? This sounds like wet garbage. Right? It is so bad.
I never got punk, personally. It never did anything to me.
Yeah, I'm looking at a website here, and it's saying, nope, Steve Gaynor has said there's nothing to the bells. They don't mean anything. The missing bells are just missing bells.
All right, so should we wrap this thing up? Anybody got anything else?
I do have a question. What's the purpose, like, in real life of these bells? Like, why do they have their claim to a different room?
That would be to call. So, like, if you had multiple servants, right? Like, the servant would know to come based on which bell was being rung.
And all of those servants.
Well, I think doesn't it show which room the bell is ringing in? Like, if you're in a room, then you ring. Like,
yeah, it probably ties up to someone.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Yeah, it has to do with servants, is all I know.
Yeah, so the servant knows which room you need service in or something. Yeah,
that's convenient.
That's a sign of an old house. You won't see any of that around here.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, any final thoughts?
Don't play this game if you listen to this. Don't buy it.
We
give away.
I could not recommend it for 20 for sure. And now that you've heard it, you've kind of gotten it.
Anything for an hour, even if we gave away the spoilers, at least to, like, immerse yourself in it, I would say it'd be worth it.
Yeah, maybe a couple bucks.
For an hour.
I'd say for $4 on a Steam sale, it'd be worth it, but definitely not 20.
Yeah.
Is it 20 originally without the Steam sale?
Yeah, it's regularly 20.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah,
25.
Yeah,
don't go buy this game.
And spend another $5 on the soundtrack.
Uh-huh. Bobby, you want to wrap it up with something profound like you always do?
No.
Okay.
No, I'll wrap this one's up. Tommy, you want to wrap it up?
Thank you, everyone, for joining us for the first and last ever episode 3 of the DL Game Club.
Do we want to choose a new game?
No, we'll discuss.
Yeah, wow, we're kind of on the spot with this. We'll have to get back to you with the new game. We'll have them announce the new game at the end of the next DL Games cast. DL Gaming Podcast.
Can I make a suggestion on a new game?
I would love
a co-op game, so and us we could tag team and be... a game together.
Was it like I heard Brothers is pretty short, right? But that's a single player experience, isn't it?
That would be a good game though, Brothers.
Yeah, and I'd say the only issue with doing a co-op game is that a lot of our listeners might not have a reliable way to
get some friends
to do that.
There's Overwatch now, dude. Everybody has friends.
Go outside.
That's true. Yeah. So our next game,
so many Pokemon Go lovers out there,
you can Overwatch. We'll probably do that episode in 10 years when the game finally shuts off. So we'll discuss it. We'll get that to you guys at the end of the next DL Gaming Podcast. And from all of us here at the DL Game Club, we hope you have a fantastic weekend. And because they actually live in San Diego, I can say keep it classy, San Diego.
Okay. It is.